It's my pleasure to introduce Phil Hershberger. Are we on the right track? That can be both a daunting and terrifying question to ask if you've been in ministry, involved in ministry for many years. Are we on the right track? Feels like a dangerous question. Phil Hershberger is administrator of Silver Springs Ministries. That includes both Camp Andrews, which is a ministry to urban children, as well as Meadows of Hope, which is a ministry to teenage girls from urban areas. Phil has led this ministry for 24 years, but in the last 2 years, he's personally been through a complete evaluation and restructuring of that ministry. So let's give him our attention as he shares his insights with us about reevaluating our ministries.
Welcome, everybody. We had to make some fast shifts there, didn't we, and switch over to a different gear. I'm not Collier Berkshire, by the way. I don't attempt to be. Although I can get fired up pretty good. But I won't be too fired up here. Daniel, welcome to PA. Daniel just made a transition of 7 years. Paper. What?
Everyone have a paper.
Oh, does everyone have a paper? One of each?
Okay.
Yeah, welcome to PA. 7 years? 7 years in Canada, and just this week moving back to PA. So welcome, Daniel. Good to have you here. I know a number of you people. Yeah, it's good to see some familiar faces. Daniel Delphine, and then Mr. Zimmerman. Jacob. All right. Good to have you here. Where are you at? I like to, it just goes a lot better for me if I get to know who I'm speaking with a little bit, or where you're at in your personal journey. And maybe there's about three other workshops I wish I was at right now. Okay? I'll just be honest. I'm glad to be here to serve you, but, and so I know there's many good options you had, so why'd you come here? Is there a question or just in general you want to come, or is there a particular question? Can't say we're going to have all the answers, but it helps me to know a little bit. So, Jacob, where are you at Paul B. Zimmerman Hardware, or are you serving, or what's your role right now?
I'm a part-time teacher, part-time college student.
Okay.
And if you're between the lines, it means I don't really know what I'm doing right now.
Yeah. And any particular question? The reason why you came here?
Because I'm...
You don't have to have a reason to come here, but I'm just...
Okay, I don't.
Okay, it's fine. Yes, sir. Brother Justin.
Well, I'm involved with Heart Ministry in
okay.
Lancaster.
Yeah.
Have you
been down to camp?
Yeah, we have been down.
Yeah.
Last couple, 2 years I've been down there.
Yeah.
And, I just really been thinking lately if there's anything we could do different part as far as the way we arranged them, our classrooms and all that, and I thought this sounded like a good topic to sit in.
Exactly, Justin. Good. Thank you for coming. J. Mark.
Well, I'm here because Bob was in my other workshop. No, that's only part of it. But I think, you know, we're closing out 50 years and things can get in a rut.
Mm-hmm.
So I just thought this would be a good alternate. It was not my first choice, but a good alternate, so I'm glad I'm here.
Sure. Good.
So I don't have a specific question, but I know that
after
that length of time.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. That's Kevin.
I'm teaching at Cherry Hill, and then I also fall with Shiloh.
Yeah.
It's kind of two different groups of individuals. And then also church has been kind of going through some changes recently. About whether our ministry is really what it should be, or how we reevaluate that. So, kind of my personal life, but also church as well, kind of.
Very good, Arlen.
Yeah, so I'm with New Horizons in Colorado, and we are just this summer we're going to be celebrating 25 years of caring for children, and so that's an exciting time. And for us, maybe not so much being in a rut, but we have all these opportunities that are just, you know, that we want to move into, and just the one question, the first question you have in the breakout description says, "What are good introspective hard questions to ask ourselves as a ministry?" And so I'm here to find out what those questions are. I just what are the clarifying questions that keeps us on track as a ministry, so that we don't spread out too wide and don't go deep, you know, with people and all. So
it's a really good question.
Love to know what are the defining questions that we can ask ourselves.
Yeah.
To make sure we're on track.
Exactly, because there's a zillion opportunities, right?
Yes.
A zillion different directions to go. And you're embracing prison ministry now more and more. And how does that all work and fit together? Wow. My claim to fame is I was there on day one, New Horizons. So that's my claim to fame.
You were there before I was.
But I didn't stay real long, but I was thrilled about that birth of that ministry. So bless you in what you're doing there. Yes, sir.
I'm here. I'm involved in kind of two fronts right now. One is Voluntary Ministries Committee.
Okay.
Where we do short-term trips.
With BMA?
BMA. And two is at my local church.
What?
At my local church, as we've been kind of journeying, developing a board of missions that's more active and serves in appropriate ways.
Yeah.
And probably on both of those, I became part of them 6 years ago, pretty much at the same time. We probably operated a little harsh. I say maybe about 15%, as in very passive and not organized, and there were a lot of obvious things, like obviously, and we've kind of gotten to the point now where we're way better than we were. A lot of the people involved, it's better than they've ever known, but we're still not. We need to keep going, and we're getting tired and not sure, and just need to ask some questions and try to help to think about so. How to refine and how to keep building even though we're weary and things like that.
Yeah. Amen. Good times. Patricia.
I think I'm here because I've been working with some kids' ministries in our area, just local ministries at our church, and it's grown a lot. We've had some good years, and right now it feels like there's kind of a slump in it, and a lot of people are just slagging and kind of not really interested in it anymore. And I have always had a heart for the kids in the ministry, and I've had great relationships with them, but I feel the burnout too, and I wonder I feel like I need to reevaluate my ministries, and especially in finding a new life or purpose, or I don't know, maybe I'm not supposed to be there anymore, but it kind of seems like an overall thing, so I don't know if it's just something in the ministry that I can encourage, or
Excellent. Very good. Good to have you here, Patricia. Is that ministry with James Yoder and his brother, his sister?
Yes,
yeah. I took him once to go back and plug into. He wants to live in Hutchinson, actually. And From SBI, too?
Yeah.
Good.
I came to this session because I'm involved with a girls group at our church.
Okay.
Town Girls. And I'll be leading this year. And it feels like we need some just maybe a new structure and new format at Pershing. They're getting a little older and dealing with more complicated issues, and so
Very good. Thank you.
I came because I'm also involved in Children's Ministry.
Sure.
And we've been going for 6 years or so. And so sometimes I just feel like maybe the passion isn't quite there. I'm not exactly sure why, and I'm just kind of, I came here just to kind of think about, maybe what my vision is, and maybe it needs clarity, and maybe our mission as a whole needs clarity in order for there to, I think it's important to just really know what you're focusing on and where you're headed. And maybe that can kind of help you plug in.
Cool. Well, I haven't heard any misfits. I've heard all of you is kind of where I think we can learn together here this morning. I think your questions have really helped me to kind of be focused, but this is really where my heart is going and what you've been sharing. And if you're type A like Arlen, you might get kind of worried that I'm going so slow and then there's a whole bunch more left that I'm not getting to. But once you get done, you're not like that, are you?
I was like, how do you read my mind?
But this is my approach, just so some of you don't get worried. I figure you have the printed stuff, so we can fly pretty fast through the printed stuff at the end if we need to, because you have it. The first part I'm going to spend a little bit more time on, and just kind of unpacking my own personal journey. Because the reason they asked me to speak on something with leadership, and the reason I chose this or suggested this, and then they accepted it, is because this is exactly where I'm at in the last 2 years. This is exactly what I've had to deal with. And I'm going to just tell you right up front, it's not always pretty. And it gets really messy sometimes. And I've been in the deepest of the messes. I never wrote a letter that I, resignation letter, that the story of, you know, you're writing a letter and then you don't give it in. I didn't get that messy, but it was pretty intense. So I want to unpack a little bit of my own story as it relates to this subject. And so then the facts and the how-to-dos we'll breeze through at the end if we, as we have time left. So just so you don't get worried that we're not getting through stuff. So yeah, so good to hear your stories and hear where you're from. Take your blank paper now. Actually, before you take your blank paper, put your right finger up in the air. You know, when you're at Camp Andrews and you do things, you always have to do something like this that's kind of experiential, right? And so look up at your finger and start turning it in clockwise. 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 Now keep going the same direction and bring your finger down towards you, down towards your face, and then past your face and down towards your waist. And keep going the same direction. Keep going the same direction you're going. Now look at your finger. Which way is it going? Clockwise or counterclockwise? Patricia, which way is it going? Counterclockwise. What happened?
Perspective.
Perspective. How many of you know two people can look at the same thing and see opposites? How many of you know, now we're not going to postmodernism here, and I just don't get excited, but how many of you believe that both can be right? Sometimes. I'm not talking about absolutes, I'm not talking about postmodern thinking, I'm not talking about that, everybody's right, but there's a lot of things that you can both look at the same thing and see opposite things, and you're both legitimate, both need to be heard, right? And just the humility to say, that's totally opposite of what I'm seeing, but I want to hear why you saw that. I want to hear what's going on here. Again, I just want to make sure that's perfectly clear. I'm not talking about absolutes. I'm talking about opinions, perspectives of things. So that's so important when we start evaluating and listening to each other. Now take your piece of paper and hold it. And if you need to stand up and move, that's okay. But whatever you need to do so you can't see anybody else's, or don't. Just don't pay attention to anybody else's. That's crucial. Don't copy anybody else. Don't look at anybody else. Don't do what anybody else is doing, okay? All you need to do is do exactly what I tell you to do. And also, you're not allowed to ask any questions, okay? Ready? So take your paper, and you ready? Everybody's ready? Don't look at anybody else's. Now, hold it like a book. And fold it once. And fold it again. Now tear off one corner. Like you know how you tear off a corner like this, you know? Just tear off a corner. And turn it around 180 degrees. And then tear off another corner. And open it up. Everybody stand up and show off your beautiful piece of paper to everybody else and see how good you follow directions. Oh, you guys, you're on the same wavelength. Jacob, you're a little off there. Arlen, you're way off. I'm sorry. Oh, Jared, you got a hole in the middle. What'd you do that for? I didn't tell you to put a hole in the middle. Patricia, hole in the middle again. But that's so different. All right, so you can sit back down. So what's a lesson for this when it comes to reevaluating your ministry and collaborating as a team?
Different ways of doing it.
Different ways of doing it? Okay. Is there more than one way? You know, sacred cows make good hamburger, right? What else?
Evidently, the thought processes are a little different. You hear something, you process it differently, so you end up with a hole in the middle.
Exactly. You process things differently, right. Good point. What else?
You have different choices along the way.
Different choices? Okay, now it's your turn to criticize my leadership. You got to criticize my leadership because my leadership was lacking. Well, how was it lacking?
You didn't tell us specifically how to do the next step.
Right. Ah, there was a lack of what? Clarity. Right? You knew what you wanted. I knew what I wanted. But you didn't know what I wanted. And there was a couple different...
And we thought we knew.
How many times in leadership have you said something as clear as you know how to say it, and people heard different things? It's not clarity. What else?
Once you start down a road, it affects things 5 steps later.
Oh.
So the way I folded my paper,
the beginning.
The way he folded his.
Exactly.
And it starts us on a course.
Good point. Really good point. Anyone else? How you start makes a big difference how you end, right?
Yeah.
Same way with ministry. When you recalibrate and reevaluate and clarify the basics, that changes everything from there on, right? Crucial that you get the base right. Okay? Anybody else? Okay, so just to give a little introduction to a story in the last couple years here at Silver Spring Ministries. That in itself is part of the journey because Camp Andrews had been going for 40 years or so and cruising along, reaching inner city youth, short-term groups coming into camp from inner city areas. And then plop, here comes this 40-acre farm across the road. Who said yesterday, someone I heard you say yesterday, that opportunities can be, opportunities can be a real test of a ministry to know which way you go, whether it's $1 million plopped in your lap or whether it's a farm or whether it's whatever, can really test if you're going to stay focused. So we're really aware of that, that we want to make sure we don't just all of a sudden go off in a deep end and start something totally different on that 40 acres. So we prayed and thought about it. And one of the current staff, Teresa, really had a vision for a long time to start a home for residential home for girls, teen girls. There's one in Wilderness Way, but it's not really on Baptist, and it's so far away. Bald Eagle's doing a great job. Allegheny's doing a great job. Fairplay's doing a great job. Lots of place for boys, but what about the minors, the teen girls? Lots of single mother places. I mean, there's probably 10 in the county for single mothers, 18 and older. It's simpler. There's a lot of reasons why that is that way, but not for teen girls. Teen girls that have been abused, teen girls that really need a year or two away to a safe place to face some of the most painful and difficult things, horrific stories, and find healing, and also just discover what it means to be a godly woman in this day. So we said, but does that really fit our mission? Because we're Camp Andrews introducing urban youth to Jesus. How does that fit our mission? And the more wrestling we did, the more we realized, yeah, it does fit, because we'll be focusing on urban youth still. They'll be alumni of Camp Andrews, primarily. And it will really fit because we can then refer the girls there instead of said, good luck, I hope you make it, after they give their hearts to Christ at camp. So that all worked. But what we weren't prepared for, I wasn't totally dumb. I realized this would be a pretty big shift and a stretch for us organizationally. But we really had no idea what kind of a shift this would really be. To give you an example, we went from 3 employees to 12. We went from one organization to two very diverse organizations. Yeah, it's both urban youth, but the approach, the intensity, I mean, just about everything else except that they're both urban youth was different. Two different properties, two different teams, and just so many things were different. But it's interesting how that crisis of growing so fast and stretching in such dramatic ways did not create the problem, though. It just revealed it. Because I could hide it when it was just Camp Andrews. I could hide my lack of organizational structure when it was just Camp Andrews. It was small enough I could hide it. It was small enough I could put out fires. I could run over and do this and do that, do this, whatever. And it kind of fit my own personality just to kind of wing it. And just to fix problems as they come up and just keep things happening, and everything came back to me and I answered questions and we'd get it all done. But all of a sudden, when we stretched, realized it actually didn't create the crisis, it revealed the lack of organizational structure. And so it's amazing. Is there a quote something like, crisis is the mother of invention? or something like that. But there's something about when you're in a crisis, you're like, okay, I get it now. I still remember Merle Herr and another guy were walking with us and trying to evaluate and trying to sort through this, where to go from here. And I still remember they're up in the gym meeting room there sitting across the table from me. And I said, okay, Phil, let me just give it to you straight because I know you like it straight. If you don't make a dramatic change in 6 months, this place is going up in smoke. Okay, you got my attention now. Because all up to that time, I was like, I ran this camp for 20 years. I raised a couple million dollars. It's been successful in just about any measure you can make. Who are you people coming in that don't know about camp ministry to say anything different? Sorry, I have a little pride there. Lots of it sometimes. But then all of a sudden he said that. And he said, I'm serious, Phil. If you don't make some dramatic changes, your managers are all leaving and you're going to be left holding the bag and it's going to go up in smoke. Is that really what you want? Okay. So about 4 days later, I picked myself off the floor and I said, so what exactly do you mean? Actually, I asked him in that meeting, what exactly do you mean? He said, it's like this, Phil. He said, you're flying along in a Barnstormer plane. And it's great. It's a great ride. You love it. You love the adrenaline of loops and ups and downs and flying by the seat of your pants and people in the crowd, ooh and ah, wow, Camp Andrews is doing great things. Wow, what a ride. What amazing, amazing. And you're doing all these loops and whatever, and the crowds are cheering and giving you money, and it's just a great, great ride. But it's not going to work anymore. That worked the first 20 years, but it's not going to work anymore. So what do you mean? He says, it's time to switch planes. What do you mean by that? Yeah, it's time to switch planes. It's time to get out of the Barnstormer plane and crawl into a twin engine plane with 10 seats, not just one seat for the pilot anymore. You need 10 seats, and you need twin engine because right now you have one engine, and that's your charisma and your engaging people and casting vision and inspiring people, and that all works great when you're small. But he said, now you have to adopt and embrace the other engine. The other engine is policies, structure, protocols, clearly outlined ways of doing things. I about died because that's not me. And he said, you got to have a team. There's no way you're going to run two organizations and 14 staff unless you have a team of varied gifts. So long story short, the two managers at Camp Andrews side now, two managers of Meadows of Hope side, administrator of both, added Silver Spring Ministries as the parent organization, Meadows of Hope over here, Camp Andrews over here. But all five of us managers get together every week, collaborate, cross-communicate. How can we help each other succeed? Not just us and them anymore, not just the other side of the road, because that road was actually a big, huge canyon. Competition, and who's going to get the skid loader, who's going to get the IT guy, who's going to get whatever. And it became a bridge instead of a canyon. And now we're on the same page. Now when you guys are hurting, I'm hurting. I'm going to come over there. And it's just, we just met Wednesday morning. At the end of the day, those managers care deeply about each other's ministries and each other's roles. And there's constantly talking about, well, what can we do? How can we help? And how can we, if there's an ownership there. And I just sit back and just say when it's time for more coffee. And they just work it out. And it's just so beautiful. It's incredible.
Can you teach me that?
So it can work. Yes, sir.
Can you teach me that? I mean, as I hear,
yeah,
you, just the whole thing of bringing people, you know, where there was a canyon, now
yeah,
the bridge, and the different personality that you,
yes,
have to have to lead this.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're going to continue to comment on that, but I'd love to hear even more.
Well, one of them, it was I really drew out their gifts. We took a StrengthsFinders 2.0. There's many hundreds of books like this out there, but this one really helped us. StrengthsFinders 2.0, it's the name of the book, $15, and you take a test, and it tells you your five – it's not like a personality test. It's more like a five – your strong suits, five ways you bring value to the ministry. And so that really helped us. We put that on a graph, and so now we almost make a joke of it. Oh, we want to get something done. Marv, what do we do? And it's almost like a joke of it because he's the guy that gets things done. And so how would you get it done? Oh, I would do this, this, and this. Great. So you're pulling out their gifting. That's been a huge one. Or Dwayne, so what's wrong with this? Because you can always figure out what's wrong with it, you know. Used to drive me totally crazy, but now it helps me so much because now he tells me what's not going to work before it doesn't work. Before I had to figure it out on my own. And then Kurt's got that insight in that he's in touch with the heartbeat of the people. He just knows what people are thinking, what's going to work as far as working with people. So we're trying to work through some issues right now. And well, I think this would be the most effective in pulling those people in. And then Jenny's been a huge asset too. So recognizing their gifts and almost making a joke of it, but calling them out and saying, we need all of us here. I don't have it. And just humility of saying, I loved being the man that was in charge, to be honest with you. I just love that everybody had to ask me for questions and everybody couldn't make a decision without asking me. It felt kind of good. I was so indispensable. Everybody had to come to me. And I was so powerful, too, because I could just say no to any money. I could just make every decision. And plus, I know how to do everything right, right? Wrong. But you kind of have your way of doing things. And that just all had to die. And it was painful to give up that power and give up that authority. And my focus became, what can I do to empower the managers so that there should never be a question that comes to me, or very few. If a question comes to me, especially if there's the same question comes to me twice, my question is, why did that have to come to me? Something's not in place. They should have known what that answer was. They should have known how to find that answer without coming to me. And so, like Dwayne says, constantly try to give your job away. Give power away, empower others. Instead of, now do I keep it focused? Do I still ask the tough questions? Do I still make sure we're on track? Absolutely. I'm still the traffic cop, but it's about empowering them. And when people, another thing is I used to do all the budgeting myself. Now they each four do their own budgets. Now it comes back to me and we wrestle with it. But anything I can do, come on, Jaron. Anything I can do to empower them, to make them feel part of the team, to build ownership, and that they have a say in the matter, that's just huge. And calling out their gifts and affirming their gifts. But I'd like to talk to you more, Arlen, about that. But that's all huge. But really, when it comes down to it, there's one thing that's missing here that I'm not saying yet. And really, maybe I should have said this at the beginning. You know, humility is kind of a tricky thing because it's a tricky thing to talk about yourself. As for me to talk about my humility, is that really humble? But someone told me, I read somewhere, it says, humility is not thinking less of yourself, it's thinking of yourself less. It's not thinking less of yourself, but it's thinking of yourself less. To have my focus be on the managers and be on the other staff and caring for them, instead of make sure Phil gets the last word, make sure Phil has the final say, make sure Phil has the control he needs. So I'm a little hesitant to talk about humility and brokenness because that's been so central, such a central theme in this whole journey, that's what really had to happen. There had to be a brokenness in my own heart, in my own spirit, of letting my baby go. Because this is a baby I grew. I mean, this baby that tripled in size and a lot of affirmation over it in ministry. And the reality, I realized how much pride there was over it. And it was my baby. I knew how to do it, and I do it well, and I could prove it to you. And that was one of the biggest things that really needed. Before we could really evaluate the ministry, we could talk about the core values and all those things. I, as a leader, or it can be anybody. It doesn't have to be just the leader. But I would like to say, me personally, it starts with me, whoever you are, whatever your role is. It has to start with me having a brokenness and an openness to say, well, maybe there is different ways to do it. Maybe I'm not an all-star CEO. Maybe there's other gifts and perspectives I need to hear. And just that true brokenness and openness. And if you don't read any other books, read Leading with a Limp. If you haven't already, Dan Allender, Leading with a Limp, just totally, totally took me on a journey that really turned me for a loop. Here's some quotes from him. To the degree I face and name and deal with my failures as a leader, to the same degree I will create a culture that grows and retains productive, committed colleagues. I face and name and deal with my failures. You know, another one, Paradox is the degree I try to hide or excuse my weaknesses, the more I will need to control, be more insecure, and the more rigidity I will impose. That's so true. Because I always thought the way to build trust is to act really competent and like I'm in charge and I know all the answers. And there's a sense that you need to show some competence. That does build trust. But my staff, especially Meadows of Hope staff, are so in tune with emotions and stuff. And constantly they say, you know, Phil, when you're transparent and vulnerable about your own journey, vulnerable with what God's doing in your life, it just builds tremendous trust with us. How does that work? How does talking about my struggle build trust? But they said every time you come with an open spirit about what God's doing in your life, not running yourself down. Humility is not running yourself down. It's not thinking less of yourself, but just a transparency and an openness. Or when you make a decision and it blows up in your face, come back and say, you know what? I did the best I could at the moment. That's what I saw. But, you know, I really blew it there. I just didn't see the whole picture. And to come back and admit that. It's not about preserving this facade of in charge and have it all together. It's kind of like the, well, sorry, ladies. No, I shouldn't say this. It'd be a little too crude. But it's like everybody else can see your faults. And so why not just admit it? Because everybody knows them already. It's not like you're so good at hiding it, so now you're going to share it. It's like everybody knows them already, so why not just be honest and vulnerable about it? It's a tremendous building of trust. My attempt to not feel off guard and out of control leads to greater self-absorption and the foolish conviction that I can control my world. True core strength is willing to feel disturbed and helpless and still not running, resulting in real passionate life. To be broken is to embrace these realities. I am never wise or gifted enough to make things work. My failures will harm others, myself, and the process, no matter how hard I try to avoid failure. The greatest harm I can impose is by not participating, quitting, or pushing for control. Calling out for help from God and others is the deepest confession of humility. Now, it's not like, oh, I don't know anything. You guys want to help me lead this place? No, but it's a genuine humility to say, I need a team. I want to hear your perspective. I want to hear where you're coming from. It's so crucial. So if you're not sure where to go in ministry, not sure where your role is, what your part is, I am convinced that far more crucial than knowing all those answers is the refining that God wants to do in your heart. You can talk about fixing church or fixing a ministry or fixing this. And yeah, things are broken, need fixed. But it's got to start with my personal journey, my personal heart. And that was the most painful, difficult part for me. So let's jump into some of these other things now. How do we measure success? What is the bottom line, or what are the outcomes that matter most? So do you know as a ministry, do you know as a church, whatever you're involved with, do you know that at the end of the day, this is what matters the most? This is what matters, that the gospel gets into 100 countries or whatever it is, or that the whatever. What matters the most? What would be missed the most if all of a sudden New Horizons would die and disappear? What would people say, oh, we miss? What is your greatest impact? What would be missed the most? For us, it would be missed that their inner city children would not have an affordable place to go for camp. They would. There's not really any place to go. Meadows of Hope, they're begging us, make sure you stay open. Yeah, I said, but we're short-staffed and we need house parents. We need a single mentor in the house. If we don't get somebody soon, we're not going to be able to take any more girls in. Yeah, but whatever, you don't close, because if you close, we would have no place to send our teen girls. It's just not a good option. So knowing what is the bottom line is so crucial. What is really that's going to matter the most? It gives you focus. It gives you some clarity. But, and not ideally speaking, but in reality, what makes us smile? What says, now this was a good day? For example, I can talk about souls. R3 are souls, stewardship, and sacrificial service. So souls are important, stewardship of resources are important, and sacrificially serving people that come to camp or Meadows of Hope are important, right? Three S's. But my staff don't just look at that paper. They look at me and say, so what really does make Phil tick? They can tell what makes me smile. They can tell what's most important to me at the end of the day. No matter what I say, they don't really care what I say. But when I get so excited that the bank account is really good, I mean, obviously you have to have a good bank account. But if that really excites me the most, they can tell what excites me the most. If I hear 10 kids got saved on the weekend, if I go like, oh, well, did they pay their bill? You know, you can put anything you want on paper, but the bottom line is they're going to go by what they can really feel from the director as what is most important, what matters the most at the end of the day. And when we go off on and on about all these spiritual answers and the right answers, if it's not congruent with what we actually do, they're going to say, I can't trust that leader because he's saying all these good things, but he's not backing them up. Do I just exist and hope of being a good witness? You know, spreading out the gospel across the world is great, but how do I know that's doing any good? You know, up in Canada, I grew up in missionary work, and sometimes I'm trying to be too hard on church planters because it's a tough job, but sometimes we were just existing to be a witness in the community. Now, being a witness in the community has its value, but what is really the goal? Is it to plant an indigenous church, indigenous-led church? And if it's not happening in 20 years, why isn't it happening? Either change the goal or change how your methods are, right? But so often we just, well, we're just being a witness, and that's really best we can do. And that sounds really critical, but either change your purpose or else change your methods of reaching it. Because it's so disheartening to go plug along and saying our goal is to plant indigenous-led churches, and then 20 years it doesn't happen. That gets really disillusioning. So how do you measure success? How do you define success? But ministry is so hard. Like, for example, because we personally don't count heads, cut down conversions. I'm philosophically not comfortable with counting scalps, as it were, counting conversions and seeing how many you can add up, you know. But maybe some people are, and maybe that's a good measurement. But how do you measure? How do you know at the end of the year that, yes, this has been a successful year? How do you know? Do you know? Are there any measurements that say, yeah, it's been a great year? Why? These five reasons. And next year will be a great year if we reach these five goals. A little more clarity and focus. So not just, well, we just hope we're still alive and we hope there's still money in the bank at the end of the year. So the next question, what is our focus, mission, and values? Is it clearly defined? Souls, stewardship, and sacrificial servanthood. What is it clearly defined? Because it used to be that whatever Phil said, it happened. And so whatever mood Phil was in, we spent money. And if he wasn't in a good mood, we didn't spend money. And it was all up to Phil's moods. And every question came back to Phil. But now, if there's more clarity and more clarity about values and more clarity about who we are and where we're headed, the managers can figure it out on their own. They have their own budget. They know what the values are. They know what Phil would do if he was in the situation. They know who we are as a ministry. They know where we're headed more. Still room to grow, but they know more where we're headed. And does it define reality? Like I said earlier, is it consistent? So what is the culture of our staff team? There's so much could be said about this. Is the culture of the staff team truly life-giving and empowering, or is it still about tight control and top-down leadership? To me, the longer in leadership, the more I realize what a challenging art leadership is. Because you got to stay focused. You got to keep everybody on track. You got to keep people focused on the same page and the same direction. But you can't be too tight with your control or else it just kills. There's no empowering. So a couple weeks ago, Kurt and Jenny, they're my in touch with the hearts of people. I can care about people too, but they said, you know, we got a toxic environment. We got a toxic environment here that I said, nah, it's okay. Everybody's going to get over their stuff. We had some issues came up a year ago. And people are going to get over it. We got to move on. Got a vision. Got to go. And now we just really need to talk. Okay, I'll get them together and talk. And then, talk, but not you talk. What do you mean, not me talk? I'm the leader here. I'm going to facilitate this. Well, I'm going to pull this team together. No, it's not going to work. I said, you're too much of the part of the problem. Oh, okay. Well, not so much that, Phil, but they're mad at you. And so if you facilitate it, it's going to be really, really tricky to really for it to work out well. Actually, we think we should spend $600 and bring somebody in to do it. $600? Stewardship is our value. What? It's the best $600 I ever spent. So right thing to do. And it was kind of nice. I could just sit there and just watch it happen. And watch the tears come. And watch the confession come. And watch the accusations come. And this facilitator was incredibly gifted. And fortunately, he already knew our ministry pretty well. So he was ahead of the game. Incredible. And went 5 hours instead. And we've got two more scheduled here in April. Powerful. But if I would have, 5 years ago, I would have insisted that I lead that conversation. And then I get us through this because a good leader would do that. But just saying, okay, I can step back. You managers think that the staff would... See, they're closer to the staff than I am. You think they would take... Oh, much better, Phil. No offense, Phil, but they would take it much better. And they were dead right. Dead right. No question. But that culture and the staff team, it was so toxic. I didn't even realize that I wasn't close enough to it, but it was just killing the staff. It was so toxic. And he just brought us together because he was neutral and he could just bring us together on the same page. But that's so crucial. I mean, you can talk about values and goals and strategic planning and whatever, but if there's a toxic culture among you, I said, nothing goes right. It's just like pushing a wheelbarrow uphill for days. And I've pushed a wheelbarrow uphill for days. I know exactly what that feels like. But once there's a camaraderie, like just 2 days ago, our managers got together for breakfast, and there was a camaraderie. There was, yeah, we'll help with this, and we'll do this, and yeah, we can help with that. And I just sat back and ate my eggs. You know, I said a few things here and there, but basically, they took the bull by the horns and made it happen. Powerful. It's coming. Okay, the last page. Another best books I've ever read. Ideal Team by Patrick Lencioni. Highly, highly recommend it. It's really easy to read. It's not thin, but it's a really easy read. He nails it down to three things. No matter if you're entry-level person in youth ministry, no matter if you're trying to get things unstuck in youth ministry, if these three traits are in everybody from top to bottom in the ministry, you won't believe the difference it will make. And all of a sudden, there'll be much, much more clarity, camaraderie. Huge difference, whether it's a leadership team or if it's youth workers, no matter who it is, these three traits are so crucial. And I just love the way he succincts them down into just three bite-sized chunks. First one is humility. We talked about that a little bit before. I would say it's the most indispensable trait. Not thinking less of yourself, but thinking of yourself less. Where everyone brings their view openly and honestly. There's a culture where you're free to bring it, but I don't lift it up too high. You know, sometimes in youth or we're so strong. This is the way it should be. This is the way to fix this. This is the way it should be. This is what we should do next. Bring it honestly, bring it openly, but bring it with an open hand, whatever you do. I don't care how great the idea is. There's got to be humility or it just won't work. I don't care if you're the CEO or who you are. That you're open to feedback. Admit when you're wrong. Teachable. Point out the contribution of others and not draw attention to your own. You know, a good leader, when there's something good happens, he looks out the window and he notices who is responsible for the good and recognizes and calls them out. When something bad happens, even if it's not related to him, something bad happens, what's the first thing he does? He doesn't look out a window to see who to blame. He looks in a mirror and he says, what's missing here? How can I lead our ministry or organization differently? That's from Jim Collins, I think it is. But humility, and it starts with me. Even if you're not the leader, it starts with me. It's not about you figuring out. We're out of time, so we're going to go real fast here. People smart. Recognizing how my things and actions affect other people. Being aware of, like yesterday, I embarrassed one of my staff that came into my workshop late, and I called them out and introduced her. Stupid! Why would she want to be introduced in the middle of a workshop and called out as she comes in late? But I just was so proud of her, so I called her out. But being aware of those things, and go back to her and said, hey, sorry, Jenny, my bad. I was stupid, but I'm so proud of you. Hungry, going beyond what is required, looking for more to do and learn, never have to be pushed, self-motivated. I mean, when you have hungry people, it's just like, man, give me more, give me more. I mean, you just love people like that, right? But it's all about you first doing your part of calling them out and being humble enough to recognize their gifts and call them out and being people smart, aware of your blind spots. And are people scared to tell you how you're messing up? Are you aware? Do you have that privilege of having that 360-degree vision? So Jared says, I have to quit, so I better quit. But I'm very passionate about this, as you can tell. And it's also just a personal journey I'm on of just trying to hear what God is saying, but it really comes down to leading with a limp to start with. It comes down to that humility and that openness and that brokenness to say, no sacred cows, everything's on the table. Can we have the trust here to be engaged about what's really going on and learn and grow together? Lord bless you and your challenges. I'll be around. I'm not going anywhere, so I'd love to talk to you more, particular issues you're facing. Thank you, Jared. Bless you all.
This recording and many others are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. For more information, call 1-814-789-4769 or visit us online at www.christianlearning.org.